Ever wondered how seemingly separate parts of a chronic illness actually link up?
You mean like the physical symptoms versus maybe cognitive changes?
Exactly. Like things you can see and things you can't. How do they really intertwine to affect daily life?
Yeah.
Well, today we're exploring just that. We're taking a deep dive into the complex relationship between cognitive impairment and quality of life for people living with multiple sclerosis or MS.
And it's quite a relationship. Some of the findings might even surprise you a bit.
So what's our main source for this?
Okay, so we're primarily looking at a really fascinating cross-sectional study. It's from the Current Journal of Neurology, published back in 2022.
Okay.
The title is Association of Cognitive Impairment and Quality of Life in Patients with Multiple Sclerosis. And it's by Fardin Nabazadi and a team of researchers based in Iran.
Got it. So our mission today is really to unpack what the study shows us about how these cognitive challenges impact, well, everything, a person's overall well-being, both mentally and physically, when they're living with MS. Hopefully you'll get a clearer picture of these often overlooked dimensions of the condition.
Yeah, the hidden aspects.
So let's start with MS itself. Many people know it as an inflammatory disorder, central nervous system.
Right, affecting the brain and spinal cord.
And it primarily affects younger adults, often causing significant disability. That's the part most people are familiar with.
True, but the cognitive side, that's often under the radar, like you said, and it's really significant. While physical disability gets a lot of attention, somewhere between 40 to even 60% of MS patients also experience some form of cognitive impairment.
Wow, 40 to 60%, that's substantial.
It really is. And it's not just one type of MS. Cognitive decline can happen across the board, all MS phenotypes. Although it does tend to be more pronounced in patients with secondary progressive MS, SPMS, compared to, say, relapsing remitting MS, RRMS.
Which is the most common type, right?
Yeah,
RMS.
exactly. That's the most common form initially diagnosed.
And we're not just talking about, forgetting where you put your keys occasionally. This is more significant.
Definitely. This early cognitive impairment, it can actually be a predictor. It can predict an earlier switch from that relapsing remitting phase to the secondary progressive phase.
Which means disability progresses faster.
That's right, more rapid disability progression. And something else quite interesting from the research.
What's that?
Well, one study found that IQ scores were actually lower in individuals before they developed MS compared to control groups.
Before, so even pre-diagnosis.
Yeah, it suggests there might be some very early, subtle factors at play, even before the clinical onset.
That really makes you think.
It absolutely does. And when you look at what influences cognition in MS, it's complicated, lots of factors.
Like what?
Well, negatively, things like a history of smoking seem to have an impact. Also, the level of physical disability itself and verbal intellectual ability.
Okay, so those can make it worse. Are there positive influences too?
Yes, thankfully. Things like physical exercise consistently show benefits. A healthy diet, too. These seem to be protective, or at least helpful.
And neurologically, what's happening in the brain?
From a brain perspective, we see things like white matter lesions, which are characteristic of MS, but also atrophy shrinkage in both cortical and subcortical gray matter. These structural changes contribute significantly.
It's definitely a multifaceted picture. Which brings us to quality of life, or QOL. How do we even define that in this context? It's more than just economics, right?
Oh, absolutely. The definition has evolved. Modern thinking kind of splits it into two main types. There's objective QOL that's closer to the traditional view, covering economic aspects, employment, physical environment. And then there's subjective QOL.
Which is more about.
That's more about personal feelings, life satisfaction, happiness, perceived well-being.
And I gather there are different ways to measure that subjective part.
Exactly. You can use generic measures, which apply to anyone, or disease-specific measures. And for something like MS, those disease-specific tools are usually much better.
Why is that?
Because they're tailored to the unique challenges of the condition. They ask questions relevant to MS symptoms and their impact.
Makes sense. So, what did this specific study use?
They used a well-established disease-specific instrument called the Multiple Sclerosis Quality of Life 54, or MSQOL 54 for short.
MSQOL of 54.
Right. And its results are typically broken down into two main scores or components.
Right.
One for mental health, called MSQOL-MH,
MH for mental health. Got it.
and one for physical health, MSQOL-PH.
PH for physical.
This gives a much more nuanced view than just a single QOL score.
So, linking this back to cognition, It sounds like cognitive decline isn't just this separate issue floating over here. It actively causes problems.
Precisely. It can independently lead to real limitations in someone's work life, their social activities. It has direct consequences.
And it's not just cognition influencing QOL, right? There are other MS-related factors.
Oh, definitely. You have to consider things like fatigue, which is hugely common in MS depression, mood disorders, anxiety. They all play a massive role.
Behavioral changes, too. Personality shifts.
Yes, those can occur as well and significantly impact not just the patient's QOL, but their family and relationships too. It's a whole complex web.
It really is. So how did this study try to untangle that web, specifically the cognition QOL link? What was the setup?
Okay, so it was a cross-sectional study design, meaning they looked at a snapshot in time.
Right. Not tracking people over years, but looking at them at one point.
Exactly. They recruited patients diagnosed with relapsing remitting MS, the RMS type we mentioned.
Okay.
And these were patients referred to the MS clinic at Sina Hospital in Tehran, Iran. The recruitment period was between July 2018 and May 2019.
And how many people were involved?
They ended up with 92 patients in the study group.
And the demographics? Any standout features?
Well, it was predominantly women. 76 out of the 92 participants were female, which is pretty typical for MS populations.
Right. MS affects women more often.
Correct. The average age was around 33, maybe 33 and a half years old. And the mean disease duration was just under 7 years, about 6.8 years.
And you mentioned they were careful about who they included exclusion criteria.
Yes, very careful. They wanted to isolate MS effects as much as possible. So they excluded anyone with a history of substance or drug use known to affect cognition.
Okay.
Also excluded heavy alcohol use, other major psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia, or other significant physical illnesses that could confound the results.
Anything else?
Yeah. Crucially, they also excluded anyone who had experienced a relapse or received corticosteroid therapy, like high-dose steroids often used to relapses within the last 3 months.
Why was that important?
Because both relapses and steroid treatment can temporarily affect cognition and mood. So excluding recent instances helps ensure they're looking at the more stable underlying state.
That makes a lot of sense. So they had their group. How did they measure everything? It sounds like a lot of data points.
It was comprehensive. They used several standard tools. For physical disability, they used the EDSS, the Expanded Disability Status Scale.
That's the common one, 0 to 10 scale.
That's the one. 0 is no disability. 10 is death due to MS kicks. So it gauges physical impairment.
Okay. What about mood? Depression is a big factor.
Yes. They assessed mood using the Beck Depression Inventory 2, the BDI 2.
Yeah.
It's a widely used questionnaire. Higher scores mean more severe depressive symptoms.
Right.
They also assess verbal intellectual ability using something called the NART, the North American Adult Reading Test.
And quality of life.
That was the MS School 54 we talked about, giving those separate mental health, MH, and physical health PH score.
Okay, so disability, mood, verbal ability, QOL. What about the core cognitive assessment?
Ah, yes. For cognition, they used a battery of tests called the AMCFIMS. That stands for Minimal Assessment of Cognitive Function in Multiple Sclerosis.
Minimal assessment? Sounds like not much.
Huh. The name is a bit misleading. It's actually quite thorough, but consider the minimal standard battery recommended for MS clinical trials in practice. It covers several key cognitive domains.
Like what specifically?
Okay, so it includes tests like the Pancet-Paced Auditory Serial Addition Test, which measures things like processing speed, attention, working memory.
Okay.
The SDMT, Symbol Digit Modalities Test, which gets at attention, visual processing speed, motor speed. The CVLT-2, California Verbal Learning Test for verbal learning and memory.
Memory tests, right?
Yep. And the BVMTR, Brief Visuospatial Memory Test Revised for visual and spatial memory. Then there's the CAWAT, Controlled Oral Word Association Test for verbal fluency, how quickly you can generate words.
Okay, fluency.
Also the JLO, Judgment of Line Orientation Test for visuospatial judgment. And finally, parts of the DKES, the Delis-Kaplan Executive Function System.
Executive function. That's things like planning, problem solving.
Exactly. Flexibility of thinking, inhibition, stopping yourself from making a mistake, planning, problem solving. The MACI-FIMS really gives a good overview of the cognitive areas most commonly affected in MS.
Wow, that is comprehensive. So they have all this data, disability, mood, QOL, and detailed cognitive scores. How did they figure out the relationships? Statistically, I mean.
Good question. they used a two-step approach. First, they ran simple Pearson correlations. That just looks at the basic association between two variables, say, a cognitive test score and a QOL score.
Okay, like a first look.
Exactly. But then, crucially, they used a partial correlation model.
Partial correlation? What does that do?
It allows you to look at the relationship between two variables while statistically controlling for the influence of other variables.
Ah, so removing the effect of potential confounders.
Precisely. In this case, they controlled for age, level of education, how long the person had MS, number of past attacks, marital status, their EDSS disability score, their NIART verbal ability score, and their BDI depression score.
So they tried to isolate the specific link between cognition and QOL, taking out all that other noise.
That was the goal. To get a clearer picture of whether cognitive scores themselves were linked to QOL, independent of these other factors.
Okay, so let's get to it. What did the data actually show? What were the findings?
All right. So the initial simple correlations at first look did show something interesting. There was a significant positive relationship between scores on the CVLT, the verbal learning test.
Better verbal memory.
Right. Better verbal learning scores were associated with both higher mental health QOL, MSQL MH,
right,
and higher physical health QOL, MSQL PH.
Okay, that sounds intuitive. Better memory, better quality of life. Makes sense.
It does seem straightforward. But, and this is the really crucial part.
There's a but.
When they applied that partial correlation model, adjusting for all those confounders like age, depression, disability.
Yes.
That significant positive correlation between verbal learning, CVLT, and QOL disappeared. It did not persist after adjustment.
Wow. Okay. So the simple connection wasn't the real story once other factors were considered?
Exactly. It suggested the initial link might have been driven by, or at least heavily influenced by, those other factors like perhaps depression levels or overall disability, rather than verbal memory itself having a direct independent link to QOL in this adjusted model.
That's fascinating. So what did remain significant after the adjustment? This is where it gets unexpected, you said.
Yes, this is where things took a turn that the authors themselves described as somewhat unexpected, especially compared to some prior research, though not all.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
For the mental health component, MSQL MH, they found a significant negative correlation with scores from two cognitive tests, the DKEFS, measuring executive function.
Better executive function.
And the JLO, the judgment of line orientation test, measuring visual spatial judgment.
Wait, negative correlation. So higher cognitive scores on those tests were linked to lower mental health QOL.
That's exactly what the adjusted analysis showed. Better performance on executive function and visual spatial judgment tasks was associated with lower self-reported mental health quality of life.
That feels completely backwards. How could being better at those cognitive tasks lead to feeling worse mentally?
It is counterintuitive at first glance, isn't it? The authors didn't definitively explain it, but they acknowledged it was unexpected compared to some studies, although they noted it was consistent with other findings related to physical health QOL.
Any theories? Why might that happen?
Well, one potential line of thought, and this is speculation, is maybe increased awareness. Perhaps individuals with stronger executive function or visuospatial skills are more acutely aware of subtle deficits elsewhere, or more cognizant of the overall impact of MS on their lives.
So like a higher level of insight leading to more distress.
Possibly. Or perhaps those specific cognitive skills are less directly tied to the aspects of life that contribute most to mental well-being, or there's some other complex interaction with mood or coping styles that the model didn't fully capture. It's complex.
Definitely complex. Okay, what about the physical health QOL, the MSQL PH? Were there adjusted links there?
Yes, there was one significant finding there too, also negative. MSQL PH was negatively associated with the BVMTR, specifically the delayed recall part, which measures visuospatial memory.
So again, higher physical QOL linked to lower visuospatial memory score.
That's what the analysis suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Higher MSQL PH was associated with lower BVMT delay scores.
Yeah.
Again, it's not that straightforward better cognition equals better QOL picture we might assume.
No, it really isn't. It highlights just how nuanced these relationships are. It's not simple cause and effect.
Absolutely. The study authors themselves really emphasize this complexity and the somewhat surprising nature of these specific negative correlations after adjustment.
So taking a step back, what's the big picture here? What's the main takeaway from all this complex data?
The overall conclusion is still quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statistically significant association between specific aspects of cognitive function and quality of life in MS patients, even if the relationships aren't always positive or straightforward.
Right. Cognition does matter for QOL, impacting both mental and physical well-being, just maybe in ways we didn't fully expect.
Exactly. And the real-world implications are important. These findings tie into other research showing that cognitive impairment contributes to tangible problems.
Like
higher rates of unemployment among people with MS and significant limitations in just managing daily life and maintaining social activities.
So it really underscores that cognitive challenges aren't just a side issue. They are a core part of the MS experience that affects everything.
Absolutely. It's not just about the physical disability that people can see. The cognitive side is crucial, even if it's less visible.
Which brings us back to why you, the listener, should care. This research really shouts about the need for a truly holistic approach to MS care, doesn't it?
It really does. You can't just focus on managing the physical symptoms like walking difficulties or fatigue and ignore the cognitive side.
There is a clear need to actually recognize and, importantly, address the cognitive challenges that patients face.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that leads to the study's call to action, essentially.
Which is?
Based on these findings, the researchers strongly recommend that clinicians pay more attention to cognitive assessment as part of routine MS care. And not just assessment, but exploring cognitive rehabilitation strategies, too.
Because tackling the cognitive side could be a pathway to improving overall quality of life.
That's the hope and the strong suggestion. Addressing cognition might be a vital, perhaps underutilized, way to significantly improve how people with MS feel and function day to day.
So, wrapping up our deep dive today, we've seen just how profoundly intertwined cognitive function and quality of life are for people living with MS.
Yeah, and with some really surprising correlations that definitely challenge our first assumptions about how cognition relates to well-being.
It certainly makes you think.
It does. It really prompts us to consider how we define health. Maybe we need to broaden that definition, especially for chronic conditions, to really integrate mental and cognitive well-being alongside the physical.
That's a great point.
This research suggests that improving someone's quality of life might mean focusing on areas like specific cognitive functions or the psychological impact of awareness that we might not have initially prioritized.
Absolutely. It leaves you wondering, what other hidden connections might exist between aspects of health, cognition, daily living that seem separate on the surface?
Definitely something to mull over.
Something to think about as you go about your week.